ready for the interview. And if you get a cue live on a laptop, watch what I'm gonna do. Welcome to the show, let them know we got a point of view. Hey, yo, let's have a combo. Say what you feel, be real, that's the motto. Real talk, pronto, Dr. D, PhD, hit an intro. Hold up, wait, gotta be social. Network global, a home for the locals. Gotta be social, network global, a home for the locals.
All right. Alyssa, thanks for joining me. And I guess for this kind of holiday special a little bit here. How are you?
I like it. Thank you so much for having me, Darian. It definitely has been a special holiday. So I'm excited to be here.
You said you had a launch. Did you say a book? Was it a book launch?
Yes. I released the first book of a series called The Lionheart Chronicles, and we've released the first book on the 21st, which was also my birthday, and we made a benefit out of it. So yeah. it was a wild night, but it was exciting.
A Christmas birthday around Christmas time. That's always a different deal. Yeah.
It is, you know, and you always get a reaction from people, but I love it. I love December. Cool. My parents never combined the holiday to torture.
Oh, good.
Me. Yep. I know. So I've had a few boyfriends try to do that, but They didn't last.
They didn't. You know what, guys? You know, it didn't work out. That's a big mistake.
Number one rule of a Christmas baby, you don't combine them.
Big mistake, guys. Like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was great. I had so many friends and family come together, and I've been talking about writing this novel for like 6 years. So I'm sure a lot of them didn't even believe that it was real until I was like, hey. So we're actually throwing a party. That thing I've been working on for 6 years, it was a thing, and it's coming out finally. So,
well, talk a little bit about, this is fresh, kind of the inspiration for this, for the book.
Yeah, the inspiration, it's kind of an elaborate story. In 2017, I suddenly lost my father, and he was kind of, he was my person. He was my person. I was his person. And that was my first brush with death. And I was fortunate that I made it to 21 years old, having never had to experience losing anybody. But I also had no idea how to do it. I had recently walked away from my home religion. And so all of my sort of coping mechanisms and skills that I had known for my whole life were unraveled, and everything I understood about the universe and God and how things function was just on the rocks and unraveling. And then I lost the person who made the world make the most sense to me. And it was a super scary time. So I was spiraling in grief for a while until my oldest sister sent me Dan Millman. Are you familiar with him and his work? He's amazing. So she sent me his book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And I rolled my eyes at her trying to fix my life with her book recommendations like people do.
Right.
And I read it in like 3 days and had the rest ordered and on my doorstep, and bought a plane ticket to his next retreat in Costa Rica a few months out. And I had no idea why, but I just knew it was my right next step. You know, like I had watched sort of out of body, watched myself go through all of the different stages of grief. And just had no, like, there was no final step. There was no acceptance, right? And I was like, I just can't fathom a world without this person. He had been sick for the few years before, and I'd been scared of losing him, but I'd never actually envisioned what that would look like. And so I bought this plane ticket, went to Costa Rica, and I had a week full of crazy, wild, synchronistic experiences that in each of their own ways just provided so much different type of connection to from my body and my spirit and my heart. And it woke me up in so many ways. And when I got back, I told my sister, I said, I could write a whole book on that week in Costa Rica. And she's the wrong person to say that to. She's a book coach. She helps people write their books. And so I ended up doing just that, wrote the manuscript raw a few times, and then got this really beautiful inspiration for a series that follows the main character, Scarlett Leonelli, through experiencing life's tragedies one at a time. And sort of finding her solace in traveling to learn different laws of the universe in different beautiful cultures and places around the world, where she learns how to alchemize those tragedies into something greater. So the first book is all about grief. It's based in Costa Rica, and it's completely fictionalized with a whole lot of magic and set apart from me and my own story. But that's where the inspiration came from.
What was so special about your dad? Why was he that person for you?
Oh my gosh, everything was special about him. He made the world so magical. I think his laugh was like, I had friends who could hear my dad's laugh down the block.
I love that.
So loud. he had this giant big Portuguese mouth. And I just remember my mom always standing next to him like this, like scary, scary, because he was always so loud, but there was no quiet for him. He was either not talking or he was the life of the party. And and it wasn't in this big, haughty, everything's about me way. He was, I have a good story for you.
Yes.
This will really explain how he is. So he passes. My two older siblings fly in, my other sibling drives over, and all four of us kids are together with my mom, and we go to the morgue, and we're going through the whole process of choosing all the things. And the woman at the morgue says, okay, what do we put on his death certificate for occupation? And we all like look at each other. We spent at least an hour and a half sitting around trying to figure out what the heck to put for my dad's occupation. One, because he was like a master of all trades. He just hopped around. He had his real estate license. He worked in construction. He shot pool professionally for a while. He taught golf. He grew up on the dairy and was a businessman. And he just tried so many things and did so many things in his later life. He went to school to become a blackjack dealer. And
I love that.
Because he was interested in it. And then he did it for like 2 years and learned the game. And
wow.
And so we're all sitting there like, well, if we put a dairyman, he's gonna crawl out of his grave and hurt us. But we can't put golf teacher because he loved golf, but he was so much more than that. And so we actually ended up putting human performance coach because above all else, what my dad did was just immediately meet someone, see the potential in them, get to know them, and just try to pull it out of them. And he did the same thing with all of us. You know, it wasn't just golf. It wasn't just one sport. He saw that I had a gift and inclination for writing when I was young. And he just dove right in with me, helped. He coached me on speaking. He got me into debate. Yeah. He got me into everything writing that I needed. And he was so good at seeing the magic in other people and bringing it out of them and helping them to maximize that potential. And he had his own system for doing that. And so that was, after an hour and a half of all arguing through our tears, that was what we settled on.
That's amazing.
We won't get hit by any golf clubs if we choose.
What a neat human, sounds like.
Yeah,
I mean,
exceptional.
I mean, isn't that amazing for a child to say that about their parent, which is not always common with people. If you spend enough time with a lot of people, meet a lot of people, this is not always a common thread among families.
It's not. And I'm very, fortunate, even though we lost him young. He was 63 years old and I was 21. And people say that, you talk to them like, oh, that's so young. But, a lot of people don't get 21 years with another human like that, let alone a strong father figure. So nothing but gratitude for that,
what's the grief been like since you've lost him?
Well, like I said, for about 3 to 5 months after losing him, I just had no idea what the world was. I had no idea why everything was continuing to move around me. There's this one line in the book, I wept as time stopped and I wept as time refused to cease. And I feel like that's exactly what happens when we lose someone and our whole world just came to a stop. And yet there's this, we're looking on the outside, watching everything continue to move around us. And it makes no sense to us. how the world can keep on going without that person in it. So that's how it felt for a good, you know, 5 months to a year. And I think what was really pivotal in my grief journey, especially after Costa Rica, was learning that there's still magic alive in the world, even after the people who keep the magic alive for us pass on. It's still out there, and it's a matter of figuring out how to continue finding it and continue creating it for ourselves. So magic, meaning, purpose, you know, all kind of in the same pot there. But that was really pivotal to keeping my eyes awake continuously and my spirits up. And so, you know, I don't think that there is ever an arrival point. There's never an I've healed. I grieved him, but I'm better now. And, you know, grief is, I'm 7 years down the line. And I, for the most part, I can talk about him and enjoy the sharing the experience of who he was. But I wake up some days, or if I have a dream, you know, like I still wake up and I have my moments of, oh my God, he's not here. I see a picture of him and I'm like, how have I not seen that face every day for 7 years?
Yeah.
You still go through that. And I have friends who, you know, they lost their parent 17 years ago and they still have that experience. So I don't think there's ever a really getting on the other side of it. It's a constant journey, but it's really trying to find the gold and how those people impacted your lives and continuing to keep them living on.
Do you think like that's one of the big misconceptions of grief is that, you'll heal and there's another other side to it? Or are there other things, other misconceptions about grief that you think would be important for people to understand?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a misconception in our culture, period. And I think that specifically in our self-development culture and with everything that's advertised to us, there is a constant, if you do this, then you'll get here. And there's like this separation from where we're at and where we're supposed to be or should be or could be. And it really disrespects our process and our journeys. And it makes us feel like we're always striving because, you know, trust me, I've set goals personally and professionally and I've reached them. And I'm like, wait, this isn't the other side of anything.
Yeah.
This is just a point in the process and a point in the journey. And so, you know, one of Dan Millman's favorite quotes or famous quotes was about comparison disrespecting our process. And, you know, our culture is kind of constructed upon comparison and everything being sold to us. Like, we can heal if we do this, this, and this, and we can develop if we do this, this, and this. And I think it's a farce. I just think it's a farce. We need to find the things that feed us and heal us and sink into them on a regular basis. You know, it's
yeah.
Expecting to come out on the other side of anything is, I think it inhibits enjoying the magic that we find in the here and the now for sure.
I was talking to my wife about this the other day. It's kind of like everything is marketing. It's like it's marketing to you to do something, to feel a certain way, like everything. And even grief, it's like what you've been marketed to or socialized into about your thoughts about grief. And if you just do these things, you're good. You're going to be alive. And it disregards and disrespects the individual process of grief for people.
It does. And I hate to talk poorly about, you know, certain methods or certain things in this, you know, there's gold everywhere and there's crazy everywhere. specifically in the self-development culture, you crack open any of those books and you get a lot of steps and you get a lot of advice. And it's, you know, I have a friend, a very close friend of mine who's deep in grief herself a couple of years out after losing a child. And I've kind of stepped back and tried to hold space for her because I've been through grief, but I've never been through grief like that. That's a whole different type. And I've watched her kind of ebb and flow and look for help and resources with therapy and with books and with this and with that. And like I said, I'm trying to hold space for her and my heart hurts watching her, her try to fit herself into all these places, because every time she's trying to fit herself in, there's a part of herself that's not fitting in one of the steps or something. And it's just, it's never the same. You know, the process is never going to be the same for every person. I found my solace in traveling, in mm-hmm. taking myself out of my ordinary and putting myself into the unknown, where I was facing language barriers and cultural barriers and diving into other people's traditions and ways of life. And it was this very challenging, like constantly challenging process for me, but it made me feel so alive, and it kept me finding the beauty constantly in all of the differences. And so, you know, when I was back in school, I studied sociocultural anthropology. Mm-hmm. That's what I got my degree in. And so I already kind of had an inclination to those things, but it was something that really just kind of curved my grieving process and helped me to look for meaning again in ways that I didn't know that my dad filled me up, you know? And the process is so different for everyone. The healing, the medicine is all going to look very different for people.
Yeah. And when you said something, the gold and the crazy, that made me laugh about it. But it also made me think of this question, which was, how did you cipher between the gold and the crazy?
That's a great question. I'm going to have to think about that answer.
Right. Because if someone's going through grief, maybe it's difficult to decipher that. Yep. Because your emotions are so huge and so big in the depth of it that something that seems like gold could actually be crazy for that. So I think Freeport Suffering, how do you make that distinction? Because, you know, there's a lot of people marketing self-development and doing these things, and they're preying upon people who are desperate in many ways. So, I mean, I think it'd be interesting to know the difference. I mean,
yeah, I agree. You reminded me of a story, right? Because that week in Costa Rica was, you know, I had come from a Christian home, mm-hmm. and I kind of threw myself into this circle of woo, we'll call it. And I was trying to remain open. It was something that my dad, one of his greatest lessons for me was to just stay teachable, stay mm-hmm. a student in everything you do, stay open, continue to learn, stay eager. And it's been one of the best things I've ever learned that's helped me in my professional development and my personal development. And so I was like pried wide open when I got to Costa Rica and hearing all these things and seeing all these things. So I'm going to share with you a story that's in the book because you reminded me of it. But this woman who I had not talked to the entire retreat came up to me and she said, "Did you lose someone recently?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Was it a man?" And he was older, silver hair, brown skin, big, big smile, like big mouth. It was like, yeah, she's like, "He's about 5'8". She continued to just describe my dad to a T. And I was like, "You know, woman, you're freaking me out here. What are you getting at?" She was like, "He's been following you around your whole like time since you've been here. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to freak you out, but you know, I'm a medium and normally I see energies and I see this and that." And she started explaining it to me. And to which point I'm just sitting there like, I'm sorry. Are you telling me my dad's spirit is following me around right now and wants to say something to me? And then, so it was this crazy experience, right? You look at that and you're like, oh, that's crazy. Is that gold or is it? It's absolute bonkers. But I sat there, I listened, and I think something that we're quick to do in our culture is to jump to grab answers, you know? Yeah. And I remember what spun me out when my sort of spiritual world started falling apart was this like, no, I had the answer before. Okay, so what's the answer now? And I'm flipping through my books and through my studies and talking to my teachers, and I finally went to my sister's house and bawling in tears at like 18 years old. And she asked me the most pivotal question. She said, "Alyssa, what if, I just want you to consider, take a breath and consider, what if there is no answer?" And I was like, "Well, there is an answer. Like, there is a truth. What do you mean there's no, what if there's no answer?" But that, I think the questions are more important than the answers. And continuing to ask myself that whenever my little control freak tunes in and wants to know what's going on or what the answer is to this or that, I think that the best answer is looking at the question and watching. When you ask the question, what comes up in your body, what comes up in your mind, what comes up in your spirit, you know? And so to do that, we have to listen. And I do recommend staying open and listening to all the things, the crazy and the gold, because I've had things like, you know, 7 years ago when that happened with that woman, I was looking at her like, ooh, you crazy. And now, 7 years later, maybe I'm at a different place in my spirituality or in my grief process. Yeah. And I look back and I'm like, you know, she said this, this, and this. And today that's what I need to hear.
Yeah.
So I think that there's gold everywhere. And also, there's some crazy. And we do have to, you know, our bodies are so much more powerful than we realize and we give them credit for. And I used to know discernment as, has how it's taught in the Christian church. And now I know it. Now I recognize it in my own intuition. You know, I sit, I listen, but it's definitely our minds. We have to be careful with what we let in and what we don't. So,
yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because discernment to me is one of the greatest superpowers you can have in your life, because there's always these forces and different people who are marketing you towards the thing that they think is the best thing for you. Or, hey, you know, there's always lots going on. And even if you think of it about it in Christianity, there's like 60,000 different sects of Christianity. So it's like, well, which version? Because there's very different ideas about what's right and what's wrong and different sects of it. And then you have very interesting ideas of what's right and what's wrong and different ideas about spirituality and things of that nature. Life is coming at you fast with all these different ideas for it. And I think for people, the difficult thing about people, especially when you're in grief, is that's a very easy time for people to come to you and to persuade you towards something. And that, I think, there's a sinister nature to that. When people knowingly do that during your grief to pull you towards something.
Yeah.
So I think that discernment is really critical. And it's hard, especially when you're young. You're not always very discerning when you're really young. You just kind of like leap at everything. Whereas when you get older, you start develop, your mind develops more and you're like, wait a minute. You know, you get that more wisdom of living and you start going, oh, okay. And especially if you experience grief regularly, you start understanding that process a bit more, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And even when people don't have bad intentions, you know, if we're marketing aside and everything aside, I remember, as I said, I came from a very Christian community. Mm-hmm. So when my dad passed, there was a lot of, oh, Jesus wanted him early, or he's with the angels now, or all of these like really strange cliches that came at me,
which,
you know, come at me with those a year before my whole spiritual understanding unraveled, then I probably wouldn't think twice about it. But talk about discernment. Those things were being said to me and I was like,
not great timing.
It's not sitting right. It's not sitting right. And I watched someone very close to me who had kind of followed in the same direction with me be pulled back by those things because it gave her a familiar comfort.
Sure.
But I was so determined for something more. I was like, you know, I've heard those things my whole life be said to other people and now they're being said to me and I just don't, it doesn't sit right. And I remember sitting on, this is another scene. I'm giving you so many spoilers from this book.
A lot of spoilers.
But you're reminding me of so many parts. You're reminding me of so many parts in the grief journey that made a lot of sense to me. And one of my favorite scenes was in this book with my brother. And I was sort of sitting in the crevice of my dad's shape in the bed after he had passed. And I'm sitting there and my brother, who had left Christianity to pursue his passion in science and long before I did. And so he'd sort of paved the way in that direction. And I told him everything that people were saying to me. And I was like, you know, I know that there might not be an answer here, but, you know, heaven and hell aside, and all of the other things that we think about after death, like, what do you think happens to the soul, like the human spirit, the soul? Does it just go black? Does it just disappear like that? You know, like, what do you think happens? And he didn't have much to offer, right?
Of course not.
he didn't have. So I sort of put that scene at the very beginning of the book. And then at the end, another flashback to him saying something that gave me the most comfort in all of my grief. And that's the one thing I can tell you for certain is that he quite literally lives on in our DNA, in our blood, and our mannerisms and our spirit. And every single time that we choose to laugh and choose to give and choose to love in all the ways that he did, he's still living. You know, we're continuing to live his legacy on. And that has lasted with me and everything that I've endeavored to do over the last years. And I think that was the most important, for sure.
I mean, there's certain something very ethereal about being a human being and the spirit. And there's just too many stories, too many feelings about living, and stories about after living. And it's actually just such a beautiful thing, I really think. And I think that, like, the not having all the answers, this is, like, I like spirituality and I like science. Like, I love both. And I think one of the biggest mistakes of both, but especially science, is that we're going to discover how people came to be. We're going to discover this planet has this or that. And the answer, and whenever something happens, it's always more questions, even when you find out more. And the thing to me is always, there may never be this definitive line in the sand. And it's okay. That's actually okay. But humans struggle with that. We struggle with that because we want to know the finality. Everything in life, no matter how small or big, we want to have certainty. Certainty, humans crave it. But I think y'all should be comfortable with uncertainty as well.
Yeah, it's like the grand duality, right? We crave certainty and security, and then once we feel like we have it, the novelty of the unknown, the novelty of the uncertainty calls to us.
I don't know. It can't be this.
Or, you know, like, all the mundanity that comes with certainty, once we feel like we have it and we get there and we're like, oh, but everything is so much sparklier in that whole space that I know nothing about.
So
it's like a really intricate, beautiful balance. But you definitely see it in the polarization between spirituality and science quite a bit.
Yeah, it's always like, I like this movie basically because I like the ending. Sorry, spoiler if you haven't seen Ad Astra. I like space movies a lot. And I just like it in Brad Pitt and Tommy Lee Jones, and they go out to the edge of the solar system, and Tommy Lee Jones, he says, you know, we thought we'd find all this stuff, and we got out there and there was nothing. There's literally nothing. And I always like to do this with people who are so sure there is life on other planets. I'm like, but it's okay to believe there's life on other planets, but maybe the other side is true also, but also could be true that there's just nothing. And then other people go, that's crazy, there's too many planets and stuff. Like, yeah, but if you have one option, there's also the idea that the other option may also be valid too, for that. You know, it's not like, oh, there's billions of stars, there has to be life. Okay, well, what if there isn't? Like, and I think there's a weird uncertainty, like it makes people uncomfortable to think that this is it. But what if it was, though? It's okay to have that conversation. And it's okay to think that there's life teeming everywhere. I mean, it's great.
I know. I had that conversation with my friend who I'd met in college, right? Yeah. Before my dad passed, we clicked really quickly. And she told me recently, she was like, yeah, you were so crazy on the Jesus train that, like, I didn't think we'd hang in there. I didn't think we'd be friends in there for all that time. And it was really quite funny to hear, because I had asked myself that, you know. She was like, I mean, I believed in a God and this and that, but I think the question is, but what if there isn't? But what if there isn't a God? Then what does all this mean? And if it doesn't mean anything, where do we create the meaning? Because the meaning is, it's in how we search, right? It's in the journey. It's in how we search for what you're saying, the unknown, for getting to the place at the end. And I think it's about, it's really about how we try to create the meaning along the way.
Right. And grief is the same way. It's like, there's no cookie cutter way of dealing with grief. I mean, it's like there's different processes people go through, and to trivialize it down to, hey, I have the answer for you, that you will be cured of this, healed of this in so-and-so days. It's the same thing as exercise. And there's, oh, 30 days, you're going to be amazing. You know, it's like, no.
Yep. And it's really, it's conversations like this that will help people to realize that they're all marketing. It's all myths.
It's telling you, there's a lot of marketing.
It's really about debunking all of the things that you know, have been sold to us about personal development or about healing through grief.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like you say, with like I've been, I guess what most people would label as being a Christian in general my whole life. I would still consider myself that, but I have a very different outlook on it. You know, because there's so many different ideas about it, and it's so much, I think the restrictive punitive aspect of it is just ridiculous. And you know, I also am very much like, okay, I have a lot of questions all the time about it. And I think one of the important things is you could still be in something and have lots of questions about it and think some of this stuff's pretty wrong with it.
Yep.
And I think that's the problem is we sometimes, well, I have to be like blindly in this and have no questions. I'm the opposite. I have a lot of questions and I disagree with a lot of things, but still have a very strong faith. And we don't see a lot of people like that because they've never been socialized into it that way.
Absolutely.
It's just like, don't you ever question anything, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, I'm all about finding the right spiritual community for people. I think it's a great support. But I think that when you find an institution or you dive into an institution that tells you to stop at asking questions and to blindly follow, that's, you know, that's when it gets concerning. And a lot of those institutions don't just do that, but they try to teach you what discernment is. And that is what gets tricky.
It is. That's what gets tricky. And I'm just not into things where it just like downgrades people for being themselves or that they're wrong for this and that. I'm like, oh, well, just be nice to people. Like, I could just like really love people. That's kind of the basic tenet, you know? Like, why are we like hashing this into weird stuff? Like, you know, so I just, I think it's weird.
Are you a Peaky Blinders fan? Did you ever get into that series?
No, I have watched it. Yeah, I have watched
it. Yeah. So I just recently watched it, so I have to bring it up and talk about it. But there's this one line in there from Tavi Shelby where he says, all religion is a foolish answer to a foolish question.
Mm.
And obviously, there's a whole lot to that statement.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It's the answer and the question part, right? And I think it brought me back to what questions are we asking? Because what questions are we asking that current religious institutions are answering for us? And what questions are we asking that they can't? And are we answering the right questions to try to find the right sort of next steps for ourselves?
I love it. I love it. So awesome. Well, before we get out of here, I want you to promote your book. Let's market something very awesome for the people that is very genuine. Please let everyone know.
Thanks so much. Yeah, the book is called The Alchemy of the Beast. It is the first of the Lionheart Chronicles series.
Pretty cover. Yeah.
It's thank you so much. I designed it. I appreciate it. Put a lot of heart into that.
Yeah, I can see.
But it's on Amazon for sale, Barnes & Nobles, Goodreads, Apple Books, all the things. Released December 21st. And I'm excited for the next few ones. If you're interested in learning more, you can read more at lionheartcreations.org/chronicles or find me on social media, Alyssa Noel Coelho. And that's about it. Thanks so much for the conversation.
That's about it. Yeah, I really appreciate it. It was enlightening and meaningful. I'm all about that. That's my whole goal is to have meaningful conversations over and over again, people. So
likewise.
Thank you.
I love it.
Awesome. Thank you, Alyssa. Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.